Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has said he will announce his running mate this week ahead of next week's virtual Democratic convention. His choice would be only the second female Democratic nominee for vice president in American history.
My heart is filled with pride. My fellow citizens, I proudly accept your nomination for Vice President of the United States. And I am proud to run with a man who will be one of the great presidents of this century, Walter F. Mondale.
That was Geraldine Ferraro accepting the nomination for vice president at the 1984 Democratic National Convention in San Francisco. She was the first woman VP nominee from a major political party, and that was the last time a Democrat had a female running mate. Republicans had their first and only woman VP candidate in 2008 with then-Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. Returning to the present, with Joe Biden's announcement expected any day, we got to wondering, what sort of influence will a female candidate have on the campaign and politics more generally? And will Biden heed calls to select a woman of color for the job? Listeners, this is your chance to be a pundit. Give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Make your voice heard on this issue. Who should Joe Biden select? What influence do you hope she'll have on the campaign? Again, the number to call is 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. We'll also hear what some of you had to say from our Text the 21st group later in the conversation. We're joined now by Julie Lee Merseth. She's a professor in the Department of Political Science at Northwestern University. She's also faculty associate at the Institute for Policy Research and a faculty affiliate at the Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy. Julie, thanks for being here today.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
I'd also like to welcome Kelly Dittmar. She's a professor of political science at Rutgers University, Camden, and director of research at the Center for Women in American Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers. Kelly, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And I'd also like to welcome someone who's been covering the Biden campaign from here in Illinois. Natasha Karecki is a national correspondent for Politico. No doubt she will be continually hitting refresh on Twitter throughout our conversation today. Natasha, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
So, Natasha, I want to begin with you. We know that Biden said back in March he would pick a woman as his running mate, and there are no shortage of women qualified for the job. Who is at the top of his list right now?
Well, it certainly is what we're all trying to figure out. But, you know, the latest reporting we did was there's still quite a bit of buzz of around Kamala Harris. Her team in particular was feeling very good. We were even getting some, a little bragging emojis and that kind of thing last night from some close allies and donors. They were feeling good. Susan Rice, the former national security advisor, is really rumored to be on this very short list, the short list from the original short list. We have her, she worked with Biden in the White House under the Obama administration. They have the longest relationship. She's very comfortable in that setting, you know, obviously has dealt with all kinds of international and national issues. And it's not just national security, but she also did deal with the Ebola virus back in during the Obama years. So she has different kinds of experiences that she brings to the table. And we were hearing quite a bit about Karen Bass as well. She's the congresswoman from California. There was a big lobbying effort in California for Bass, which we've also written about. There throughout this have been all kinds of names being rumored. Elizabeth Warren, Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, her name leaked out recently because she She went to Delaware last weekend, I believe, to sit down with Biden. And Tammy Duckworth from Illinois, also on the short list. She had met with Biden, and you know, they were vetting her as well. But the two big names we've been really hearing the last few days have been Susan Rice and Kamala Harris.
Okay, so we will continue waiting for that. And I know people do all kinds of interesting things to try and divine the future here, tracking flights, where are the planes coming in to Delaware from, that kind of thing. And your colleagues actually had an interesting little tidbit about how difficult that is because there are so many airports in that area. Kelly, I want to bring you into the conversation. Kelly Dittmar from Rutgers University, Camden. This isn't the first time a woman will have been chosen as a running mate. How many times has this happened in American history?
Right. So when we talk about major party nominations, so Democrats or Republicans, really talking about the two previous examples. So as you mentioned in the intro, Geraldine Ferraro in 1984 and Sarah Palin in 2008. And let's not also forget that we had a woman on the ticket, of course, as the candidate for president in 2016 for the first time. So in all of our history, we've had three women as major party candidates on a presidential ticket. And so this will be the fourth. And one thing that's important in thinking about the history is that it's not for a lack of qualified women. I think sometimes that gets lost in the conversation as if women weren't there, women weren't qualified to do these jobs. What you know, my colleague and I have talked about is it's really a lack, it has been a lack of imagination by those who have done the choosing, by those who have tapped running mates. And some of it is because they were looking to folks in their own network. Some of it was fears about electability, which we saw rear its head again in the 2020 primary for president in the Democratic primary. But some of these persistent hurdles to women's representation are in part due to who gets to decide who's on these tickets. And so I hope that this election this year will help to push us further so that we're not talking in another 4 or 8 years about this being abnormal or unexpected, that in fact, it should become the norm to see greater gender parity on our presidential tickets.
Yeah, and I want to put a pin in that idea, the some of the obstacles that have, you know, or the limited thinking, I guess, that has kept more women from being nominated for these positions. I want to come back to that a little later in the conversation. But on the history point, so we mentioned Geraldine Ferraro, Sarah Palin is the only major party nominees for vice president. But there have been other women who have been nominated or placed in the running at conventions, either for the major parties or even for non-major parties. I understand the first woman to run for vice president was actually in 1884. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so she ran on the same ticket with Belva Lockwood, who was one of the first women to run for president, not the first. So Victoria Woodhull was the first woman we know of to run for president in 1872. And Belva Lockwood, who was also the first woman who fought a case in front of the Supreme Court, ran for president in 1884. And she had a female running mate, Marietta Stowe. And they ran for, I'm going to get the name wrong, the Equality or Equal Rights Party. I think I have that correct. And so there is a long history. The challenge has been women really being taken seriously as viable candidates. So they knew at that time that it was very much a statement that they were making in running for president and vice president, that it was unlikely that their ticket would take off, but that they could make a statement about equality and the importance of women's voices. We saw that throughout, you know, the last century of other women who've run for president and vice president, really trying to push the envelope and disrupt this institution that has for so long been dominated by white men.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about Joe Biden's expected announcement of a vice presidential running mate for his ticket. He is committed to selecting a woman, and we're talking about how she will influence the campaign, what considerations Biden might be taking into account. Listeners, we want you to join the conversation. We want to hear what you think about this. Give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. 855. We're speaking with Kelly Dittmar, who is with the Center for Women in American Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics and a professor at Rutgers University in Camden. Natasha Karecki, national correspondent for Politico, who's been covering the Biden campaign. And Julie Lee Merseth, who's a professor in the Department of Political Science at Northwestern University. And Julie, I want to ask you, what do you view as the significance of this announcement from Biden that his running mate will be a woman?
I think the significance of that has to be understood, especially in the context of this particular election and this particular moment, not just around gender, but also, of course, around race. And I think that this is the part of the context that needs to be understood, too, is how important not just the president pick, but the vice president pick is in terms of nominations, given the previous presidential election too, right? And so if we think about the ways that gender factored into 2016 and the eventual victory of Donald Trump, where there was a kind of running against Hillary Clinton, of course, as a female candidate, there's this kind of feeling now about a kind of missed opportunity or something that we wanted to have happen, many people, that didn't happen in 2016. And so here we are in 2020 with a chance to put us back on course towards seeing that imagination of a woman as president or vice president get back on course, being towards more towards a reality.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned the context of 2020 not only being about gender in this case, but also about race. And I want to read a response, a text response we got from our 21st texting group. This is Rachel in Urbana, who texted us, quote, "I would really like to see a solid, experienced, smart, tough Black woman on the ticket. Black women get a really raw end of the deal in our society. It's time to put someone in power who can empathize with all the ways the system is broken and unfair to large portions of our society. I want that wisdom about what's wrong, and I want her to have a passion to break apart the whole white patriarchy. Representation matters, life experience matters, and passion matters." Julie, some say that Biden really needs to select a woman of color this year because it will be a return on their investment over all these years in helping to elect mostly Democratic men to office. Can you talk about how race plays into this presidential election and how big of a factor you think that might be in Joe Biden's decision?
Yeah, so building on what I was just talking about, I think race in this particular presidential election, just given its timing in the world, is especially critical. Arguably, it's always been quite critical. I think the reason why we're talking so much about race and Joe Biden's decision is, of course, electoral strategy. Part of when we think about the role of race in elections is, of course, thinking about how the Democratic Party has historically been the party where voters of color tended to be a little bit more reliable. So sometimes we think about this when people talk about a captured electorate, right? And so what we have is a situation oftentimes where Black voters in particular, because since the middle of the 20th century, they have been so reliably Democratic, that there's always a concern about candidates, campaigns, and party leaders taking that for granted. And the voices that we're hearing emerging around the vice president pick and race as a consideration in the vice president pick are starting to push back against this idea that we can be counted on for sure. We as voters of color, particularly for Black voters, but other groups of color that have been increasingly voting Democratic and more reliably Democratic, that we really want to see you earn our vote. And so right now, in the context, again, not just of 2016, but also in the mass uprisings around the country against anti-Black racism, there's a real energy and momentum around insisting that when we think about what kind of signal a vice presidential pick might have towards those reliable or increasingly reliable voters, we have to consider not just gender in this particular moment, but also race.
Natasha, we've only got about a minute, a little less than a minute, actually, before we need to take a break. But you've written about how the protests against police violence sparked by the killing of George Floyd affected Biden's search. Can you talk about that briefly?
Sure, it definitely put more of an emphasis on the moment we're in this country and the reckoning on race. And it really underscored, you know, to a lot of groups, and particularly within the Biden campaign, to take very seriously choosing an African-American running mate. And to this day, there are many groups, and we've written about this time and time again, that are really going to be upset if Biden goes with a white woman versus a black woman. I think he will face a significant amount of backlash if that happens. It does appear that most of the, as I mm-hmm. said, the new and improved shortlist, because we were calling a shortlist like 24 people earlier, but
right.
it does
right.
appear that predominantly they are African.
Yeah. So we need to take a quick break. We're going to continue this conversation on women and vice presidential candidates. Stay with us. This is The 21st.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey. Fulfilling dreams since 1868.
Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the significance of Joe Biden's decision to select a woman as a running mate and what influence she could have on the campaign and the political landscape in 2020. We're speaking with Natasha Korecki, a national correspondent for Politico, who's been covering the Biden campaign, Professor Julie Lee Merseth in the Department of Political Science at Northwestern University, and Professor Kelly Dittmar, who's director of research at the Center for Women in American Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University. We'd love to hear what you think Joe Biden should do, who Joe Biden should select. You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. Kelly, Dittmar, what is it about America's culture, politically and maybe more broadly, that's led to people repeatedly raising questions about the electability of women over the years? I mean, today, you look at Germany, New Zealand, Taiwan, there are women heads of government all over the world. Britain, India, Pakistan have all had them in the past. Why has America lagged here?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of reasons for the persistent underrepresentation of women in politics across levels. But I think at the presidential level, one thing we have to just be very honest about is that this is arguably the most masculine and white dominated of our political institutions, not only in the folks who have held this office, which certainly shapes people's perceptions about electability. This is why electability is such a fraught and problematic concept, right? Because we base our perceptions of electability based on who has been elected in the past, and therefore build in all of the bias that the structures themselves have established. And those biases are around money and power in politics. So who are the folks doing the recruiting? Who are the folks giving money, and who are they giving money to? And of course, in the U.S., money matters a lot more. And we can see areas where even when women raise the same amount of money, that it might take more effort. And so there's still some of that bias in the process. And then there was evidence even just from the 2018 cycle when women won at unprecedented levels, that even then there were some biases in fundraising, particularly for Black women candidates. And so those are some barriers. And then I think the perceptual biases around what we expect in our office holders, and that goes beyond what we expect them to look like, also how we expect them to behave, but what are the things that we value in terms of traits and areas of expertise? And earlier, one of the comments was about representation mattering. And I think here we have to grapple with the fact that identity, in this case, gender and racial identities, bring distinct expertise, perspective and experience to office holding or to candidacy. And for a long time, there's been an argument and sort of backlash to the idea that you're just focusing on demographics. It's just identity politics. But those demographics are really tied to experiences that can influence representation. And if we start to value that in our calculations about who we elect, then I think we see greater diversity in those who sit in those offices and diversity of all types.
Have there been, do you think we've evolved since Geraldine Ferraro was the last Democratic vice presidential nominee back in 1984? I mean, did she face these arguments about, you know, quote unquote, electability?
Yeah, she certainly faced particularly gendered and sometimes explicitly sexist treatment, even in a lot of the arguments around her effect on the ticket was around her husband and her husband's issues, right? So some of the scandal was focused on the male in her life, which is common that women are used to that, sort of suffering for the sins of the men who they are with. Instead of being taken as an independent and individual candidate. I think we're seeing that, you know, already in the conversation around ambitious women this year and some of the comments made, that bias has not gone away. However, I think there is a contingent of those of us in, whether they be academic, practitioner, or even media, who are now calling that bias out more explicitly than we were in 1984. So I think there's an evolution in the negative reaction to some of that treatment, as well as greater and more palpable frustration with women's persistent underrepresentation in presidential politics, which I think will help the woman who is chosen. While she is certainly going to face racism, she's certainly going to face sexism, presumably if she is a woman of color, there is at least an ecosystem in which that's called out more explicitly than perhaps it had been before.
I want to read another text now. This is from Jim in Urbana, who wrote us, "I'm sure I'm biased, but I really like Tammy Duckworth. I realize she doesn't have the political resume of some of the others, but she sure has the military credentials to match anyone. She's also very quick-witted and quite sharp. I think her military credentials would pull some undecided veterans in, as well as people with disabilities. Historically, the VP pick hadn't made much difference in the general election. With Biden's age being made a factor, the VP pick could play a larger role this time. Joe really has to choose a woman, which in my estimation is about 40 years too late. A female candidate will face more scrutiny in general. Just think of Hillary Clinton being referred to as shrill and so many comments on her pantsuits. Men will not be judged by their voice or how they dress. No matter the party, we need a female on the ticket for president or vice president in every election from now forward. This would be a major plus for our country," end quote. Thank you, Jim in Urbana, for sending us that text message. Julie, I want to ask you, Tammy Duckworth is the first Thai American to be elected to the U.S. Senate. She's one potential running mate to Joe Biden, although, as we heard, maybe not on the short list anymore. But we've spoken about the representation of Black voters. What about Asian American voters?
Yeah, this presidential election cycle has already been a very unusual experience for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders from the perspective of just seeing AAPI candidates on the national stage during the primaries, on the debate stage, actually raising substantial funds, being covered in the media more frequently and in, you know, I think some importantly different ways than they have in the past. And I think it's hard to overstate how significant that has felt for many AAPI people in the United States, including many eligible voters. Whether or not, you know, those voters themselves vote differently because of it is potentially another question. It's a bit of an unsettled one. It's something that we're still learning a lot about. And partly it's because we haven't seen this on the national stage in large enough numbers for us to really have a great sense of what happens here. What we can say for sure, though, is if we think about these ideas of representation, one of the challenges for Asian Americans and Asian American voters has been getting the campaigns and the parties to actually outreach to those communities, to actually mobilize Asian American voters and see them as potentially influential. And so one of the things that we're really seeing now is by having Tammy Duckworth being part of this group of women of color that might potentially be selected to be the vice presidential nominee is actually quite huge, right? And if we put that into perspective with, I mean, we had, you know, if we think about the kind of complexities around race identities in the world and in politics, you know, we had Andrew Yang, we had Tulsi Gabbard, and we also had Kamala Harris, right, who's often described as and self-describes as a Black candidate, but of course for Asian American communities also try to claim her as their own, right? And so this moment of having this set of primary candidates, of Tammy Duckworth even potentially being named, I think will actually be a signal to Asian American voters that other people are starting to recognize that this community is not politically apathetic, right? And not importantly, kind of automatically or inherently, you know, disloyal, un-American, unpatriotic group of people to consider in American politics.
Mm-hmm. So, Natasha, I want to mention one other aspect of that text we got from Jim, who mentions that a VP pick doesn't really make much of a difference in the general election. I think the days of, you know, thinking that you pick a vice president to help win a swing state, that's kind of outmoded thinking, right? But one imagines that, I mean, I don't, Natasha, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, Biden, he might not have said this, but you kind of get the sense that maybe he's not going to be seeking two terms in office, if he even wins one term, I guess. But, you know, one imagines that that, you know, makes the vice president potentially play a larger role in voters' minds. Do you have a sense of that from talking to people, that is something that's going to be a factor this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely has made this pick all the more consequential, is Biden's age and the fact that he has repeatedly referred to his candidacy and should he be elected as a bridge to the next generation. He's given all kinds of signals that he would just be in, he would just do one term. I mean, that could change, but those are the signals he's given very strongly. And so certainly his age with relation to a running mate is, you know, fair game and something that people bring up all the time. I mean, they don't want 2 70-year-olds, for instance. I hear that repeatedly. They want somebody younger. Kamala Harris, Tammy Duckworth, you know, a lot of these shortlisters are younger, would represent the next generation and would be a bridge, but it does take on a new significance when you have someone saying he would serve only one term, and he'll be 78 years old should he be elected and sworn in.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about women and the vice presidency. Joe Biden is expected to announce this week his pick, and he is committed to selecting a woman for the Democratic vice presidential nomination this year. And I want to talk now in just the 5 or so minutes we have remaining about how women candidates have traditionally been portrayed by the media. Last Friday, groups including the National Women's Law Center, Planned Parenthood, Emily's List, and others signed a letter addressed to media executives warning them to watch sexist stereotypes and tropes in their coverage of Joe Biden's running mate. The letter titled, "We Have Her Back," said, quote, "Women have been subject to stereotypes and tropes about qualifications, leadership, looks, relationships, and experience. Those stereotypes are often amplified and weaponized for Black and brown women," close quote, it reads. And, you know, we know that Sarah Palin has, you know, said that she felt more judged as a woman. You know, there was a lot of attention on her clothing, the fact that she had had a baby, that she had another son who was going off to war, she's talked about. She had a daughter who was pregnant at the time and said that she thinks a lot of that was based on the fact that she was a woman. Kelly, I wonder what your response is to, you know, what Sarah Palin and other candidates have talked about, specifically the scrutiny that they face that men do not face as candidates.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt that there is persistent sexism and racism in evaluation of our candidates, and that we have to call it out. I do think that we have to be careful about calling everything either sexist or not, or racist or not. There's a lot of gray area in between, and I think that's the nuance that we should be demanding of those who are commentating, those who are practitioners, those who are writing for media, to recognize the ways in which gender and race are shaping both evaluation and effects of those comments. So for example, it is the responsibility, in my opinion, of somebody making a comment about Kamala Harris's ambition to understand that that attack lands differently and cues different stereotypes for a Black woman than it would for John Edwards, a white man in a previous election cycle. And so there is a shift that needs to happen among those who are commenting on politics and those who influence the process to be aware of the effect of their words and evaluations, even if they say it's unintended, or I would say the same thing about a man. It doesn't have the same effect. And that's the nuance of this that I think sometimes is lost when we say, you can't say these words, or you can't do this thing. I think we have to be aware of why not.
Yeah, and there was an LA Times headline that got called out in the last week or so. It was something along the lines of the bachelor of the campaign trail, and had a reference to Joe Biden, you know, giving a rose, which is, of course, based on that television show. Natasha, you're a national correspondent for Politico. I'm wondering, you know, do you feel this, pressure or how do I don't know how to phrase it exactly, but I mean, is this something that you're taking in mind?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been doing a lot of stories on, you know, the just sort of the horse race of this VP selection. And some of it is involved, the person who was put in charge of Biden's search committee, or at least he's a co-chair, and that's Chris Dodd. And we reported on some of the things he was saying to other people about Kamala Harris. When that story hit, we were criticized for quoting him, and we were criticized for framing it in a sexist way. From my standpoint, it's newsworthy what he is saying. And I think sometimes people confuse that. It gets to the point of, you can't quote that because it's sexist. Okay, well, isn't it significant and newsworthy that this is the person that Joe Biden has elevated in his VP search, and this is what he's saying. And it proved to be, of course it was. And it, you know, later on in the week, everybody was writing about it, and it exploded and took off. But at least initially, we were just taking a beating for even quoting someone saying that stuff. So yes, there's a lot of sensitivity around that. And I think rightly so. I mean, sure, of course. I mean, if you look at past campaigns and past, I mean, certainly Sarah Palin, she underwent a lot of scrutiny for what she wore. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I think that I do think that a lot of that criticism is fair. I think that the media needs to check itself, but I agree. There is a lot of gray area. And, you know, sometimes readers and, you know, the Twitterverse needs to check itself.
We're going to have to leave the conversation there. This has been great. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to join us today. Natasha Kurecki is a national correspondent for Politico. We've also been speaking with Kelly Dittmar. She's a professor of political science at Rutgers University, Camden, and director of research at the Center for Women in American Politics at the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers, and Julie Lee Merseth, who's a professor in the Department of Political Science at Northwestern University, also affiliated with the Institute for Policy Research and the Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy. Julie, Kelly, Natasha, thank you again so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
More to come after a short break. We're going to be speaking with the youngest Joe Biden delegate in Illinois. That's coming up on the 21st. Stay with us.